Morning to each of you. Greetings in Jesus' name, and good to see each one that is here and visitors. Let me turn with me for a message to Hebrews chapter 11. I want to preach a message this morning that I've been wanting to preach for quite a while. It was assigned to me last year, and it's parents staying visionary. And the older I get, the harder it is to preach on these subjects because I don't know. You just have less answers, but yet, same time, we need to continue to talk about these things. And so anyway, the assignment, and I went to Hebrews chapter 11. I'd like to go there this morning, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6. But without faith, it is impossible to please him, for he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. By faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. By faith Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed, and he went out not knowing whither he went. By faith he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed, and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore sprang there even as of one, and him as good as dead, so many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand which is by the seashore innumerable. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, in heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. By faith Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, and he that received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall thy seed be called. Accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure. By faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. By faith Jacob, when he was a dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning upon the top of his staff. By faith Joseph, when he died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel and gave commandments concerning his bones. By faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, because they saw what he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. We'll stop there. Parents staying visionary. And what is vision? I don't know if you're like me, but some days you're just trying to go from one day to the next, and you wonder, what is vision? Did you ever find yourself there? What is vision? We're just trying to get from one day to the next. And it's actually important that we take a step back and think about, what is vision? Do I have a vision? And I'd like to, as I look at these characters here, I'm not sure why the Lord led me to this passage, but it feels like there's something there for our time and our age. Vision is keeping the end goal in mind. One of the things that you would have to agree and see in this chapter is that these heroes of faith, we call them, kept the end goal in mind. They kept the goal in mind that, you know what, we don't belong here. We're sojourners. We want to get to the end. We want to be with God. And we want another country. They kept that goal in mind. That's one thing that vision is, keeping the end in mind. Vision is looking beyond the problems and frustrations of today and looking where we want to go. It's looking beyond the frustrations of today and where we want to go. And I don't know how you find it, but as a parent, that is something that, as you're raising little ones, and that is something you need to do on a regular basis. Look beyond the frustrations, the problems you're facing, and say, but yeah, this is where we want to go. It's where we want to head. And with an end goal in mind, vision accepts warning and acts accordingly. I see that in Noah. By faith, Noah being warned of God of things not seen as yet. Now, Noah's a tremendous man. God told him to build this boat. I'm going to send rain. As we understand, it had never rained as it did at that time. No one had ever built a boat before. And God told Noah to do something that he had not asked of anyone else. As he asked him to, of things not seen as yet. And so vision accepts warning and acts accordingly. It's part of vision. So I have 4 points I'd like to look at this morning out of here and just giving us a little, helping us with vision maybe a little bit in our time. Number one, faith that embraces the era of time in which we live. A faith that embraces the era of time in which we live. And I said this the other Sunday, and I'm going to say it again now. I think one of the things we need to stop saying is that, oh, you know, we live in such terrible times. How are we going to raise families in these terrible times that we live? I think we need to stop saying that. Let's look at these people. You know, if Noah's children, children say this thing is, you know what, Dad, everybody else is doing it. You want to know something? Apparently Noah's children could have said it. Nobody else can, right? But apparently Noah's children could have said that. I guess that they were anyone's faithful. I guess that's where it was. Now, we don't have that problem. We have actually many friends. We have many people that have the same goals, want to arrive at the same place. We're not there. And so when our children come and they say, well, Dad, everybody else is doing it. No, that's not true. Not everybody else is doing it. That's something that, but they lived in these wicked times. God asked Abraham to leave his family. Now, if you look at that history, it seems like Abraham's father, Terah, made a move, right? But then God asked Abraham to make another move, another step. And I just see it as they embraced the difficulties and the time frame in which they lived. And we have Amram and Jochebed, Moses' parents. And it says that there that they were not afraid of the king's commandment. They lived in a time when the law had been laid that all the baby boys be thrown into the river, and it says that they were not afraid of the king's commandment. They did not do that because they knew that was not what God wanted. And a faith that embraces the era of time in which we live, they embrace God's will for their families in that time. Today in 2024, it's different. But yet maybe it's not. We face extreme challenges in our time. But you look and you read, they face tremendous challenges. The children of Israel going through the desert, how did they? Tremendous challenge. Had to be. Different, yes. But God was there. The Bible talks about an arrow in the hand of a mighty man. And there's a lot of work that goes into getting an arrow that will fly. And there's a skill there that I don't know much about. One of the challenges, one of the blessings that archers today have is that they can go and pull them off the rack. And they're already tuned, they're already, the fletching's on, and it's all ready to fly. Now that's, years ago it wasn't that way when the psalmist wrote that. I suppose they made their arrows and the work that went into that. You know, as parents, one of the there's some lessons we can learn from an archer. And you have to agree with me that it'd be a poor archer who learned to shoot, and then the first time he shoots at a deer and it hits a twig and deflects, that he throws his bow down and says, I'm done, you know, I'm done with the thing. I'm not going to try again. We don't do that, do we? We pick it up and we try again. We go again. And it does feel like in the day and age we live in 2024 that there are a lot of twigs that can deflect arrows, doesn't it? It feels that way. It feels like that's a pressure in our time. But here, sworn as young families, and I realize that I don't really fit that category anymore. I'm kind of going off the other end, probably. But young families, God has chosen you to live in this time. God has chosen you that you would raise a family in a time that has many deceptive voices. God has chosen you to raise a family in a time where technology and media are destroying people and young people. God has chosen you in that time frame, in that era. And he's not asking you to turn around and run and try to do something different. He's asking you to embrace this challenge. He's asking you to, by faith, believe that God will give you the resources in these times. And so, let's take lesson one, and that's embrace our time. Let's embrace our time. Embrace the challenge. Young families, that's how you will make it, is you embrace the challenges that your time faces. And I realize that some of the things I just mentioned probably will not go away, but challenges that we face could change too quickly. But we don't know that. We're not going to grab them yet. We're not going to talk about them because they're not in front of us. Number two, I see here a faith that puts the will of God above our own desires. Now here was Noah assigned to build the ark along with still providing for his family and preaching to the unsaved. I don't know what kind of pressure that put on him. I'm not sure about that. Abram submitted to God when God told him to leave his family. He submitted to God when God said, go offer your son as a sacrifice on Mount Moriah. And if you look at the life of Abraham and how God worked with him and waited to give him a son for many years, you would have to agree that Abraham chose again and again to put the will of God above his own desires. And then when he had his son, go offer him up. Was that Abraham's desire? No, but it was God's will. Moses left the life he was enjoying because God had a special call on his life. Then we know by the conversation between Moses and God that it was not really his desire to go back to Israel and lead them out. Before that, his parents, Amram and Jochebed, put their life in danger to obey the will of God. Now, one of the things that I see in our, I think I see, in younger generations coming on, we see it maybe clearly in the world where there is a lot of focus on the child. Some of these things I want to make sure, I might read my notes on because I want to make sure I say it right, okay? there's a lot of focus on the child. And not all of that is wrong. Okay. We live in a time where there is a lot of emphasis on individual relationship with a child. And I think that there is value in that. Let's be careful. We don't emphasize that over and above God's will for our life. I don't want to lose you on this, and I'm hoping I can communicate what I think is it was something we wrestle with in the younger generation a little bit. Did the heroes of faith put their children first? I know this is risky language, but I want you to hear me out. Did they put their children first? No, they put the will of God first, and their children join them in that will of God. And parents, if we're going to stay visionary, one of the things we must continue to do is, first of all, make sure that you and I, that us, we are living out God's will for our life. Make sure that we are doing what God wants us to do. And yes, I know that you could look at me and say, but yeah, I can tell you of people who buried themselves in the will of God and it seems like their family suffered. And I hear that, I understand that. And I think there's a point there. But as we look at the heroes of faith, they were first of all concerned about doing God's will. And there's something, regardless of what a child chooses in the future, when they know that parents, that we wanted the will of God first in our life, that teaches something that they will never, never miss. They will never get away from. And so that's a challenge I want to, as we think about some of the times that we live in, the emphasis on a lot of attention on the children. Let's be careful. We live in a generation that is me-focused. And a me-focused generation will tend to train children that way, right? And so let's beware of some of those concepts that can work their way into our homes and into the way we train, the way we think. Noah's sons went with him into the ark. It seemed likely they helped him build the ark. Isaac continued the nomadic lifestyle his father raised him in. Did Amram and Jochebed put Moses first? No, they put God's will first. And they didn't see the results of that until 80 years later. And I'm not sure if they were even living then. Number three, a faith that saves from destruction. And we see that by Noah building an ark. He was commanded to do that. You could take that from them putting Moses in the little basket and some of that. But a faith that saves from destruction. Children left alone to their own will and desires will destroy themselves. I think that's a common understanding. Today, too many parents are asking questions to their children rather than direction and godly discipline. And maybe we even hear things like, well, you know, should we really discipline children anymore the way the Bible teaches because of the way society is? Amram and Jochebed were not afraid of the king's commandment. And I think this morning, to keep our vision right, we need to continue to keep that in focus. That the king, what society does not change my mentality. It can affect our mentality, but it should not change it. And just thinking of that, and I would like to, on this point, talk about some things that are prevalent to our time, saving from destruction. Now, the following is a little talk that I've given a number of times in revival meetings. I've never given it here, except for maybe a version of it one time in summer Bible school. Now, I don't want to be careful with what I say here this morning. But anyway, I'd like to talking to our children about moral purity. And one of the things I want to do here is talk about some of the strengths and weaknesses of different generations. And I want you to know that I'm not trying to pick at any certain generation. Don't take offense by anything I say because I'm not pointing fingers at anyone. I'm trying to observe and help the coming generation make right choices, okay? And so, thinking about talking to our children, so if you're here and you're 40 years or older, it is quite likely that your parents never talked to you about moral purity, what things like that. That was not a discussion that you had. That was something that would happen for years. And then it seems, at least from my perspective, that soon after that, there's a generation of people that parents that came on board and they said, you know what, something's got to change. This isn't quite the right way to do it. And so You know, about the time a child is 13, 14, 15, we say, you know what, we really need to talk to them in that time and share some things to help them. And maybe not everyone was like this, but it seemed like maybe there was at least a generation or less than a generation that, you know, they got to that point, they do that, and whew, oh, that's over. And, you know, it's done until the next one comes along. And then there was a generation that went, it's come beyond that. And in the soon after that, we had the influx of internet and everything that happened in that generation. And now, as I get around, I'm starting to hear this. I've heard this a couple times now, is that there's, in fact, the one place I preached at this past year, they said there was a message or a talk that was floating in their circles that children need to be taught everything at a very young age. And I'm not afraid to stand up here and say, I disagree with that. I disagree that children should be taught everything at a young age. And we'll talk about this some more. But one of the things that's easy for young generation to do is to react to the perceived weaknesses of the prior generation. You know what I'm saying? To react to that. And I'm cautioning you, if you're here as young families and some of those concepts of what you're thinking, I plead with you that you will do more damage than grandpa ever did by being quiet if you think that at a young age they can learn, they can be told everything there is. Now, I realize that's my opinion, but I'm not afraid to stand on it. I'd like to, get down a little bunny trail a little bit now. You're going to think I'm really going off, but I'm not. I'm going to circle it back. So we read here that Noah, he became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. Now, was that the first man? It wasn't. There was Enoch, but there was one of the first men that had righteousness by faith, which is what God has wanted all along, which is God has always wanted for. It's what he wants today, okay? He had a righteousness which comes by faith. But then we had the law being introduced, and the Bible says the law came because of sin. But if you read in Deuteronomy, I just read it, and that after Moses going over all this with the children of Israel, and he said, be careful to do all the laws and statutes which the Lord has commanded you, for this is our righteousness. That's what it says there in Deuteronomy. And there was a time frame that obedience to the law was their righteousness, even though as you read through the Old Testament, you know that God still wanted the righteousness by faith that men like David expressed. Today, we're under another law. For the law of the Spirit of life in Christ Jesus hath made you free from the law of sin and death. For what the law could not do, and that it is weak through the flesh, God sending his own Son in the likeness of sinful flesh, and for sin condemned sin in the flesh, that the righteousness of the law might be fulfilled in us who walk not after the flesh, but after the Spirit. You know, we're living under the law of the Spirit today. And here's where I want to bring in that there's not everyone, but there's a generation of people that are saying, you know, I got into trouble in the internet and I did this and that, and dad and mom, they didn't say enough, they didn't teach enough on this. That there might be some truth to that. But, you know, I grew up, and this is not against my dad. I don't mean anything I say to be disrespectful to an older generation. My dad did not talk to me, did not tell me that pornography was wrong, but I knew it was wrong. Okay? I want young people, there's a law of the Spirit. Now, you would agree with me. There are things without being told that you know are wrong. Right? Right? You agree with me? There is a law of the Spirit that if you're a Christian, you were born again, you understand, you know they are wrong. Okay? And I would like to even say if you're not a Christian, my wife and I read a book a number of years ago about a lady who was raised in a setting that was not Bible teaching. And her and her boyfriend were involved in immorality. And she said years later, after she became a Christian, she said, I knew that it was wrong. God instills in us a consciousness of what is right and wrong. And so much more if you have the Spirit of God in you, the law of the Spirit. And so what I'm trying to do is refute some of the push that is coming that's saying, you know what, Dad and Mom are kind of at fault because they didn't tell us enough. I'm kind of pushing back on that because we have the Spirit of God if you're born again. Now, I believe I'm going to get into this yet. I believe as parents, we have some responsibility. Anyway, and so I'd like to talk a little bit about, so we had the different generations I went over, and so is there a right way? And I would like to suggest that you think something like this, okay? And I welcome feedback on this. But to look at it as something that you start early with little information, and the conversation never stops. Maybe explain how that could work out. So, and I don't know if you've had a number of children, probably what you did at the first one, what you did at the last one was different. We learn. We're going to get one chance. So when life changes and things change. So anyway, there's a book called I Said No. And I don't know if, I'm not here, I don't always like promoting books, but it shows a concept that I think is good. And this is something that at 3 years old, you can sit a child down, you can read through this book with them. You do it with them, and it's teaching them how that our body is something that we keep to ourselves. And just some important little life concepts. And so at a young age, you can start having these conversations. Parents, our children are not born again. We go to other people's places. There's things can happen. You know it. I know it. And it could be my children. It could be your children. It doesn't make one better than the other. But these conversations start young about things that they can handle. And then, I know there's a couple different books, but one like John Koblenz said, book that God's Will for My Body can be started at age 9, 10. And that should last several years until they get to teenage years and some of that. And, when you start those conversations, you can start some of the struggles of youth. And you can just have that conversation. And then that can prepare you to talk to your children about marriage. And, one of the picks I have against marriage books is it seems like it's all mathematical. And if you start those conversations up through the years, and you can get to even after marriage and talk about it then. And I realize if we were in a parents' room, we could talk about a lot more. But I'd like to encourage you young people as you wrestle through some of the things to consider something like this, where you're careful with the age group, but yet you keep the conversation going. The conversation don't really ever stop. You don't really get to 15 and go, whew, I'm done. And I don't mean that parents did. Maybe that's too strong, but I think you understand the point. I'd like to, young people, you have a choice in this too. I'd like to have an illustration. I almost brought a weight set today, but I almost brought a weight set and then called a couple people up and did a little illustration, but I thought maybe it was sensitive enough that you wouldn't appreciate it. Anyway, So we have a weight set, and I'm talking about one with a little bar across there. And so, you know, you put these little weights on, right? And so, you know, we could have a weight set up here, and we could have a 6-7-year-old, and they could probably lift that up, enough weight there, you know. But if we start piling more on, not only that, we make them bigger, put the 30-pound weights on. And, you know, pretty soon, you know, a 6-7-year-old is not going to be able to lift that, right? And, you know, children, one of the things that you have to learn to be okay with is there's some knowledge that's too heavy for you yet. Just like you can't pick up that weight set, there is knowledge that it's too heavy for you. You can't handle it yet in life. And you have to be okay with that. And, you know, so this is like knowledge. So, maybe you're getting low teens and maybe a little more knowledge. It's a little more is added on, and you can handle a little more weight. But even at most people that age, it's going to get to a point soon after this that's too much weight. And you know, if you're here and you're in your young teens, the same applies. There are things that are too heavy for you yet. Conversations, knowledge that's too heavy for you yet that you're not prepared to handle. And learn to be okay with that. And now, where this illustration would fall apart is the higher teens. There's probably upper teens that might be lift everything I can or more. I'm not sure. Can I say the same to you? There's still knowledge and things that's too heavy for you yet. And the problem is at that age, it's kind of your choice. If you want to find it out, you can. You can. And, you know, I don't care how good the parent is. There's only so much you can do at that point. But I just want to encourage you. And parents, I want to encourage us that innocence is a beautiful thing. Innocence is a beautiful thing in its time and its age. And let it be beautiful. Let it be beautiful. And that is where the push to say everything at a young age is, I think, is just wrong. It just destroys innocence. One of the things, parents, I would encourage you is to tell your youth, listen, when the time is right, we will give you what you need to know for marriage. And I don't know. I feel that some of that, at least we try to get to that point. Because, you know, I know what it's like to be young and wonder and things. But you know what? Parents, you can help if you just say, listen, we're not going to let you sit. We're going to stand behind you. We're going to walk you through it. And so, young people, you have a choice in this. And I plead with you, be okay with not needing to know everything yet. Be okay with that. And there's some beauty in waiting till you're ready, till God's will is right for you. And that is a choice that you have. I'd also like to talk about youth and internet usage in this subject. It seems like in our time, it goes along with this. Now, youth, I'm not trying to be hard for the sake of being hard, okay? I'm not. My goal is to protect you. Some of these things are still your choice. Our age group has seen a lot of changes, and that's my generation. When my wife and I got married, we did not even have a cell phone. How many couples here would say that? Only a few of us. We're actually pretty old. And so one of the things I want the younger generation to think about, and our generation had to learn a lot, okay? I'm actually sticking up for my generation right now. We had to learn a lot. Do you get that? We went from getting married and not having a cell phone. We went on our honeymoon. I mean, there was, we were free. We were. No cell phone to look at. I can't imagine anymore, actually. Just can't hardly. But that's how it was. But we were part of a generation that went into parenthood, and this stuff started coming along faster than we could adjust to. Okay? It did. So anyway, we tried to grow along with it and to learn with it. But I'm still of the opinion that my age group is still behind what youth know and are able to do. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. We try, but we're behind. And I just, okay, I'm going to get to a little more of that in a minute here. I don't know that there's a problem in our church, but let's talk about it a little bit. There's no need for a phone until a person needs to communicate. I hope we can keep it that 12, 13, 14-year-olds have no need for a phone. I hope that that's something that we can stay together as a congregation. Another thing is consider not allowing internet usage until they prove access, until they've proven themselves to be responsible. And, you know, I don't know what you boys have. I'm just going to say it, okay? I don't know what you girls have. I just don't know why a 16-year-old needs internet on their phone. I'm not sure why. You know, one of the things that I encourage, I think one of the, actually Neil and Brenda and Travis and I went to a place one time. They talked about some of this, and they told us there that put the screen, computer, out in a place where the family is. I don't care if it's kitchen or whatever, and that's where your children, and we live in a time where you need access to the internet. I mean, I don't know how you live without it, but where the screen can be seen, and that's how they access, look up the things you need to look up, and anyone can walk in at any time and see the screen. You don't hide back in a corner of the screen facing the corner. The screen faces out, and so something that is for parents, some of these things are important. And you know, and after a person's 18, 19, then maybe they could have internet on their phones. Now, maybe you think I'm being really, really hard, but I just want to say something. If you talk to people who study this and study the effects on youth, I'm actually being very lenient. I'm serious about that. But these are, if we could at least get to this, if we could at least get to some of this, I think we'd be progress. So consider that. Consider not having, you know, internet is something that, so if we had the law of the Spirit, why do we need all this? Well, internet usage, YouTube watching, has a way of lulling us to sleep, lulling our senses. And yes, the Spirit of God should be able to break through that. But, and there's also something that had in the young years, there's a, I love youth, I do, but there's a lack of understanding the results of what it will do, that sometimes when you're 25 even, 30, you see it. Don't make you bad, it doesn't, but it's something that happens. Now, one of the things that, now this is probably back to parents now, is entertainment in the home. And, you know, I don't really know what most families here do for entertainment in the home, what they're doing with the screen. There are some areas that we're pretty open, but there are some areas we're pretty private about, right? I think that's probably a fact. People who study this and others, church leaders, believe that entertainment is going to destroy the coming generation. And, you know, I hear one person a month or so ago, like, the church needs to take a stronger position on some of this. Another person says, well, you know, the families, the dads, the parents need to take position on this. What's the answer? I'm not sure what more the church can do other than continue to teach. I don't really think adding another sentence in the decrees would change anything. Yes, we have a responsibility to teach. But parents, it is your responsibility to make sure the entertainment on the screen is not happening in your home. And if they, your children come home and say, everybody else is doing it, that's not true. That's not true. Not everybody else is doing it. But I want to plead with you, don't use entertainment as a babysitter. It will cost you. Don't use entertainment as a babysitter. Now this is a hard one. Youth again, maybe. Consider not allowing your youth to take their phones to bed, at least until they're 18, 19. Do you know, youth, your phone will charge just as good on the counter. Did you know that? It charges on the counter just as good as it charges in the bedroom. And Walmart still makes these alarm clocks. I go, meh, 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 meh. Anyway, a couple positive things for young families. I think that for your encouragement, I think that you may do a better job at helping your youth through these difficulties than what my generation did, because we did not grow up with it. I believe that. I believe that you could have something in your favor there. You have seen things that we didn't know, and I keep talking about how we're a little bit behind, and I think I'm going to use this illustration here. An example would be ministry, we got together a couple years ago or whatever it was, and the what came out on WhatsApp and the changes in the ministry, like, oh, we can't, you know, don't do this. And I remember coming home and a youth telling me that, well, I mean, that's great, but why aren't you addressing the ones that are a lot worse than that? And the problem is I don't know. Do you know what I mean? I didn't know that there's Be Real. You know what I mean by Be Real? I'm not sure why we use it. But so we're behind. And I think one of the things, young family, before you get too critical of my generation, I actually think you're going to face the same thing. With AI and all that coming on, you're going to be raising children. And yes, you faced it. Your youth are going to face things that you didn't face. And you're going to be the old folky and just a little bit behind. I think you're going to face that. But yet, at the same time, I don't mean that for your discouragement. I mean that so maybe don't be as critical as it's easy to be. But I would like to, in younger families, I'd like to challenge you in a couple of things. I think about this. And parents, you know, we talk about restriction to youth, but parents, are we willing to have restrictions on our phones? I perceive, now this is a perception, you may correct me. I perceive that the younger generation is a little more lax and maybe don't really see the need for filtering and accountability that the older generation did. I don't know. I'm not accusing anyone. I'm saying what I think I see, but I could be wrong. And the young ones, I want to plead with you on this, that it's kind of hard, that if that is the case, it's going to be kind of hard to rein your children and bring the restrictions, the goals I think you have into their life if we are not willing to, first of all, allow restrictions in our life. And we have to be real with that, and I encourage you to be real with that. And anyway, and I know that some of that goes around, and I think the Grandpa's Day, and I want you to think about this. Grandpa's Day said, we are better to do without than to try to handle it. That's what Grandpa did, or great-grandpa probably. You know what my generation said? We can handle it. And I don't know that we made a wrong decision. I mean, we may have. I just, do you understand what I'm saying? It would be very difficult to live that way, totally do without any kind of internet. I suppose we could. Young ones, I want you to think about this. What are you going to do about guiding your youth in all the deceptive voices that are out there today? I think young families, you need to think about that. There is, the end times will be characterized by lawlessness and deception. And I think that will only increase. And I think you should give some thought to that, of what you're doing and what direction you will give to your families in some of the challenges I think you will face. Number four, and we need to wrap this up here quickly. A faith that focuses on the heavenly country. I see this in Noah. So this was done for the saving of his house. Noah and his wife, at least that I could find, did not have any more children after the flood. The ark was for the preservation of a godly seed that would come through his children and grandchildren. A faith that is only worried about our own hide is not a saving faith. A faith that is only worried about our own hide is not a saving faith. If we have a saving faith, we will look beyond our generation. And we can look at Abraham. He looked ahead. He looked for a city which hath foundation. And actually, it says that he could have actually returned if he wanted to. It's kind of a new thought. But he said, no, not anymore. I desire a heavenly country. When Jacob was dying, he blessed both the sons of Joseph. Joseph made mention of the departing of the children of Israel. They were thinking of the next generation. And one of the jobs of my generation, my time, is to think about the next generation, to try to in some way help them and do what we can. They confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims. And I have a number of thoughts here, but I'm not going to go over them. Some on our view of money, but we'll save that for next Sunday. What is our interest in the gospel being preached among the nations? The question I'd like to ask us, to challenge us, and I just have a couple questions here. Does my prayer life in any way reflect my interest in the gospel being preached among the nations? Does my giving in any way reflect my concern for the gospel being preached and the Bibles and literature being produced for those who do not have it? I don't know, these are things we don't always talk about a lot, but we're talking about here people with a heavenly vision, with a vision beyond today, with a vision for those who do not have what we do. And maybe you say, well, I can't afford to give. It doesn't cost anything to get a newsletter in the mail. It doesn't cost anything to get the newsletter out and read it for family devotions. I encourage you in some of that. And I know it has to go beyond that. But yet, you know, it doesn't cost anything to pray for, you know, the work in Bangladesh and the work. Certainly, you know, of several works that are going on, that it's getting Bibles and stuff to other countries. You know is going on that you can pray for. And I don't know how you do your prayer life. For me, it works best if I have a day I pray for the people in this congregation. There's a day I pray for the youth, and I have a day I pray for foreign missions. I don't know how else to do it. I just, that's the way I work. And so I encourage you, if you don't, to set aside a day that you're going to pray for the missions that you know that's going on. And because if we're not careful, our prayer life becomes humble jumbled and we don't really go anywhere and we never pray for these kind of works. They need prayer is free, and prayer is the most powerful thing you can do. And give if you can and talk about it. Read those things and see what's going on. All right, in closing, the verse here, 2 Chronicles 16, verse 9, for the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth, to show himself strong in behalf of them whose heart is perfect towards him. And I think we're going back to the point on, am I willing to put the will of God first in my life? You know, if you've parented for any amount of years, you see a lot of shortcomings in yourself. You see a lot of ways you should do better at this and that, and I don't know, it's just there. You see it, you recognize it. And as I worship the Lord, as I give my heart to him, My prayer is he continues to do a work in the heart and lives of my children that I cannot do. And finally, that's what we need. That's what we want. We want them to grow up and accept Christ and allow Christ to do a work that we've been unable to do. But it's a blessing because then God gets the glory. Let us kneel for prayer.